Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Like, your last show was 6 episodes, and there's all this streaming stuff. I mean, I thought that streaming would create more shows and more opportunities for writing because, you know, it's not just over-the-air networks, but I guess that hasn't happened because you read about complaints from writers that they're making less money and there's less product out there.
Yes, absolutely. Well, my show was 10 episodes, but I'm glad you got through 6.
Okay.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
That's that moment when you feel really stupid. You know, I get about 5 of those a day. Really stupid moments. All right, a bunch of things to talk about, including a wedding that I went to on Saturday night. First of all, I heard from my cousin Marilyn on Friday or Saturday, that she had gotten the most recent COVID booster. There's another COVID booster out there now that has apparently been cleared by the CDC.
Okay.
So I called my doctor, and he, you know, without a tremendous amount of enthusiasm, said, yeah, sure, take it. You know, you qualify for it, take it. My son is looking at me skeptically now because he would be one of those who would say, you know, you won't take it.
No, follow your doctor's advice.
So I took it. So I go into the CVS at the Target because I've had such good luck at the Target.
Our friend Evelyn.
Evelyn was there. Now, I don't have such great luck to begin with because I get there at 1:37.
Lunch break?
Yeah, lunch break. The thing is shuttered and their lunch break till 2. But I wait. And Evelyn opens the window at 2 o'clock and we chat a little bit. And she says, we don't have the vaccine. We don't have any. I said, do you remember me? She said, yeah, I know who you are. And we chat a little bit more. Then she goes out of her way to make phone calls to other CVSs in the area.
That's great.
And she says, do you think you could get to the one in Spring Valley? And I go, where's that? She said, near the Wagshaws. I said, yeah, sure, I can get to there. She said, they'll sneak you in around 3 o'clock.
Sneak you in? This is not a private club.
They'll sneak you in around 3 o'clock.
It's a full-service pharmacy.
Right.
So terrible parking.
But other people have appointments. They have appointments for these things.
Terrible parking lot at the CVS or the Target?
No, the Spring Valley. The Spring Valley parking lot.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's not a great one.
But it's free.
Yeah, it's free. Yeah.
So I go in there.
Gotta fight the Millie's crowd.
I go there at 5 to 3, and there's an incredibly long line for pickup prescriptions. Like there's 9 people in the line.
So this CVS is very hard to decipher. Where's the pickup line and where's the, are you waiting?
Right. So yeah. I go to the consultation line and I wait for a while. And one woman says to me, I'll be with you when I can. Okay. You know, where am I going? I'm going to try and get this. So about 10 minutes later, she says, what are you here for? And I explain, and she hands me a form to fill out. And I go, I don't have my glasses. Let me go to my car, get my glasses to read the forms and so on and so forth. And then I hand her back the forms. And then she says, okay, go sit in the waiting room. Well, I've never been here, so I don't know where the waiting room is. I said, where's the waiting room? And I'm trying to be as polite as possible because I don't want to screw this up and not get the shot. And she points out this little...
It's at the end of the magazine aisle.
Cordoned off area, you know. And okay, so I sit and I wait. And I determined that I'd wait till about 3:30 because I didn't think it was really pretty crowded and I didn't think I'd get it done. But by 3:20, she came over to me. She put her gloves on. She said a couple of things and she gave me a shot in my left arm. So that was, you know, however many hours that is, 16 hours away from now. My arm hurts. Oy, my arm. It hurts now. But it's,
talk to Strasburg.
It doesn't hurt terribly. You know, it just hurts. It's going to hurt for a day.
Like somebody punched you.
Yeah,
right?
It's going to hurt for a day.
Yeah,
that's what's going to happen. It's going to hurt for a day, and I'm glad.
But you didn't have any of the symptoms overnight, where it sort of mimics, you know, the flu or a fever.
Yeah, feeling was just all kinds of sick.
No.
Oh well, I'm
too old to have those. Now, why did I take this shot? Michael knows why I took this shot. I took this shot because I went to a wedding on Saturday. And left that wedding, went to the wedding, utterly convinced everyone in the wedding had COVID.
Not the everyone people over a certain age. You trust anyone
under
over 40. 55, you trust.
I do. And you say I shouldn't. You say I shouldn't. I said anyone under 40 is carrying every disease known to mankind and could not care less. You know, because they're not affected by it. because they're young and they're strong. So I became convinced that I had COVID that night. And Carol said to me, do you have any symptoms? Oh, I go, no. And she said, that's because you can't get it this quickly. It's going to take 72 hours before you show anything.
Incubation period.
Right. So I'm still waiting on the 72 hours. So I went and got the shot. The wedding was the Jimmy Crilly wedding, his daughter, Margaret, to Colin Fay. It was a lovely, lovely wedding at Columbia. It was just beautiful. I mean, I've had weddings myself. I've been to weddings. This was really, really nice. So I was sitting at a table with a bunch of guys that I knew and guys that Jimmy works with. The guys that I knew at the table, Jeff Fuge was at the table, and Charlie Tate, who I love Charlie Tate. I love Jeff too, but Charlie Tate is the best dressed golfer in the world. And Charlie Tate's wife came over to talk to me at some point, and I'm completely hard of hearing, and the band was playing, and I don't really, you know.
And you're enjoying some champagne.
Yeah, I'm the only one drinking champagne. Everybody's going hardcore but me. I'm drinking champagne. And so I was afraid that Charlie Tate's wife thought I was a jerk. And I hope that's not the case, but I'll find Charlie on set because she was absolutely charming. And then a bunch of people that worked with Jimmy in his business. The girl, she's a girl. She was like 33 or 34 years old. Sitting next to me is Molly. And Molly may have had some idea what I do for a living. That's totally possible because there were people who came up to me and they thanked me for the shout out to Margaret and Colin on the PTI show. Everybody seemed to have heard it. It was passed around. And, you know, and then I get this more than once. I get this a lot. I've been watching you since I'm in middle school. Yeah, try to hurt me. Like, I'm so old now, you know, middle school. But in fact, Michael, you've been watching me.
I've been watching you since high school.
Yeah,
debuted 10th grade.
Yeah, so, you know, so I'm always grateful for that. Anyway, maybe Molly knows why. Maybe she doesn't. And she begins, we start to talk because, you know, that's what you do. You talk. And Molly says she's from a small town in Ohio, and she lives in D.C. now, and she's from a small town in Ohio. Oh, yeah, what did you do? Well, we were, you know, we had an egg farm. We had the chicken farm. Okay, chicken farm. I'm used to that. I'm used to all those guys at Rehoboth who were the chicken farmers. They were referred to derisively on the Delmarva coast as the chicken farmers, right? So I go, oh. You know, well, tell me a little bit about it. Yeah, we had a bunch of chickens. Last night I said to my son, let's just recreate this. Molly had a bunch of chickens, Michael. How many chickens do you think is a bunch of chickens?
I guess 25,000 chickens.
25,000 chickens.
Which
now,
is a lot.
Now, to me, 25,000 chickens really does seem like a lot. Where are you putting all these chickens? You got to have a lot of barns. Mm-hmm. And I know chickens are not treated well.
I think you're raising some ethical questions.
They're pushed together.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody knows that. Yeah. And it's a rough smell sometimes.
Can be.
But yes. I would think 25,000 chickens is 25,000 eggs a day. How many more can we be talking about? And the answer to how many more we can be talking about from Molly is this. 12 million. Wait, let me say that again. 12 million chickens.
It's a lot of frittata.
That's 12 million.
That's a big chicken.
You imagine
chicken
going through there with a basket, taking the eggs every single day, which I'm sure doesn't happen. So Molly's farm or Molly's industry or Molly, and it was founded, she said, by her great-grandfather, her grandfather, and her parents are in it. And her brothers, I guess, are in it. And I'm not sure she's in it. But I looked at her a number of times and basically said, what are you doing here when you got 12 million chickens? That's it got to be doing pretty well. And Nigel, you looked it up.
Yes. Well, the great thing is when you go to Weaver Eggs, her name was Molly.
Her name's Molly.
So
there, on the front page?
On the front page, it says there's a new egg in town and it's Miss Molly's Eggs.
Well, I guess so, that's the name for her. Good golly, yeah. Miss Molly.
Good golly, Miss Molly.
I guess.
Yeah, and it says that they've been established since 1929,
yeah.
Fourth generation of the family now.
Yeah, so the great-grandfather founded it.
Now,
it's in Ohio someplace,
the,
right?
Versailles, Ohio.
Okay.
I
don't know.
That's how it's spelled.
It's either near Cleveland or it's near...
Does it talk about the distribution radius?
Cincinnati.
Like, how far are we going?
It does not say that there.
I think they sell to people who sell to people.
Yes.
So is this one of those things where you have 10 different eggs and it's all coming from the same farm, but it's like different names for them?
I guess.
Different sizes, different qualities?
I looked up the...
I guess some are brown and some are white and some are extra big large, and some are small.
Got
and
a yeah. medium egg.
Strawberry yeah. eggs, do they have those?
I don't know, but you know, what if you are...
Cadbury?
How long do chickens live? They're not killing these chickens.
Yeah, it's not Purdue. They're not making chicken sandwiches out of this.
They're egg chickens.
Yes. I will check on the lifespan of a chicken in a moment, but I did look up, I wanted to give you these, the top egg producers. So this is from 2022.
How much could it have changed, honestly?
Cal Maine Foods is your leader in the clubhouse right now with just under 47 million chickens.
My God! Right. Where did they store these things?
That's a lot of chickens.
So given all these chickens, why was there such a price surge? Is this one of those, yeah. one farm got sick and that affected the whole
line? What are we talking about here? This guy's got 47 million chickens.
Cal Maine. And then it drops off big time. After that, it's Rose Acre and Hillendale. Rose Acre is 27 million. Hillendale's 20, and then it drops under 20
million. Is Weaver top 10?
Well, see, I have them listed here as just 8 million at number 13, so that's just inside the top 10, right?
Oh, yeah, 13 is inside the top 10.
This is old data.
So. But it's old data. So if she were at 12, they would be 6.
Just think of this for a second.
That's a lot of chickens.
Think like you're looking at an open field. How large is it? It's not a football field. A football field can't hold 40 million chickens. It's just an
unbelievable. So think about a golf course. Think about how many chickens one standard par 4 of, say, 360 yards can hold.
I don't think it can hold a million.
Yeah.
I don't.
Do you ever see those the water bubblers where you put your bottle underneath it says, this has saved X amount of bottles over the years.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it gets to the point where over a certain number, you just can't comprehend what it is anymore.
Yes. 12 million chickens in a room is incomprehensible to me. It is. It's, I can't. Yeah. 12 million.
It's not 12.
Chickens. Not 12,000 chickens.
1 million chickens.
12 million chickens.
So according to Google, chickens have an average lifespan between 5 and 10 years. They say
egg layers?
Well, that's just the lifespan.
What happens to them at the end? Do they pass away naturally or
they go to Boca. I think they just move south. They say generally between 3 and 7. How are they with ideal conditions, which we think these chickens would have?
I guess.
They could live to 10 to 12 years.
So it's lovely. So yes. I wanted to mention that. And then Bob Howard's General Store in New Hyde Park, which so nicely sent us the Reggie bars, has now sent a bunch of things for Michael's children.
They saved our three boys. We have three summer babies, and I think I got the birthdays all taken care of.
And we sell old candy, we sell old toys.
I am taking this for myself. I've not seen this Dunkin' butterfly yo-yo since I was a kid. So it's one of the, it's like Pogs. Everything has a time and place. Yo-yos were a huge thing at Lafayette Elementary, probably in 96, Michael, 97.
There are toys there that around the world, I remember.
Eiffel Tower.
I remember.
Yes.
You know, it's from Eileen and Ronnie. After hearing you guys talk about the paddle balls, we decided to send you some of our childhood favorites.
The magnetic gyro wheel.
Oh, look at that.
The card says we sell old candy and old toys, too. It's Bob Howard's General Store.
Just really great. Thank you, Eileen and Ronnie.
So I always have to say to Michael, will you take them? And then when will you take them?
Normally I wait for you to go to the other room, then I hide them. It's a little game we have.
When will you take them? So what else do I have to talk? I played golf over the weekend. I wasn't terrible. I honestly wasn't terrible, which is surprising.
How'd you do in the sand?
I got out after a while. Not on my first shot necessarily, but after a while. 12 million chickens.
No, that's going to stay with me for a long time.
12 million chickens.
It's a lot of chickens. It's a big omelet.
It's a lot of wigs. It's incomprehensible. 12 million chickens. I would take a break. Michael Wilbon will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Went to Symphony Hall, got tickets and I caught a Yasha Heifetz concert, a Beethoven sonata. The music was sublime, those composers, those Germans. Then suddenly from the box seats, I noticed a disturbance. Some guy leaped on the stage from the second row, said, "Mr. Heifetz, you've got too much rosin on your bow." "Phil Cousy is my name, I'm gonna stop the show. Your bow has too much rosin on your bow. Too much rosin on your bow. Your bow has too much rosin on your bow." Yasha Heifetz said, "I'm shattered. You really hurt my feelings. And oh, by the way, I'll be definitely appealing." Phil Cousy shrugged and said, "Yasha, please now leave the rostrum." He jerked his thumb at Heifetz. Phil Cousy, yeah, he tossed him. Too much rosin on your bow. Your bow has too much rosin on your bow.
A brilliant take by the brilliant Dan Byrne on the Max Scherzer thing. And they do indeed. All the violinists use rosin on the bow. Plays in, he's brilliant. He plays in Michael Wilbon. So here's my question for you. I want you to tell me which series you find more surprising right now. And there's only, for me, only two really surprising series, but I'll get to them. One is that the Knicks are 3-1 over Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought Cleveland was a significantly better team all year. And the guy who you love so much, Donovan Mitchell, has apparently stunk through this series. Or Golden State 2-2 with Sacramento, having played one game entirely without Draymond Green, and Sacramento having been a significantly better team all season long than Golden State. In your mind, which is more surprising?
The Knicks 3-1 over Cleveland. And the Cleveland isn't significantly better, nor have they been. There's a 4-5.
Yeah, but I thought they were like in the top four the whole time.
Yeah, and the Knicks are fifth. I mean, they're 4-5. It's a typical 4-5 sort of matchup, and the Knicks have the best player in the series in Jalen Brunson.
Right.
That's the difference. Jalen Brunson has been better than Donovan Mitchell. Jalen Brunson is one of the best point guards in the NBA. So they got him, and he has made it so that even they could bench Julius Randle, who just wasn't playing, who just didn't have it, and still win the game. And so, I don't want to say that Cleveland's out of it, down 3-1 going home, so they could get it 3-2.
Right.
But the other series isn't surprising at all. The other series is magnificent. It's not surprising. You know the Sacramento, it's not surprising for people who've been watching all of this all year. Because you know that the Golden State Warriors are one of the two or three best home teams in the league, and one of the two or three worst road teams in the league. And it's been a home-home series so far.
Right.
De'Aaron Fox, who is a revelation to most people because they've never seen Sacramento play, De'Aaron Fox is somebody I voted for first team All-NBA. Not third. First. That means ahead of Steph Curry. That means ahead of Donovan Mitchell. That means ahead of a lot of people. Devin Booker, first team. So, no, and I voted Sabonis second team, All-NBA.
They had two guys who are in the top 10 players in the league. So, no. But yet, you know.
See, I'm going the other way, Mike. What I meant by surprising is I didn't think Golden State would get to 2-2.
Yeah. I mean, they don't lose at home. And they haven't. Nobody's lost at home.
Right.
So that series is very much according to form. It's just a great series. I just hope it goes seven. I can't get enough of that series. It's been irresistible from the first tip off. And so no, I'm not going to say I'm surprised that the champs played like champs twice at home. Now they were one jump shot from losing that game and being down 3-1.
They were.
You know, so no, there's nothing.
The smartest player in the league pulled a Chris Webber. The smartest player in the league.
Yeah, there's some extenuating circumstances there, but that's sort of the bottom line. The circumstance being that they had just lost a challenge, so you lose your timeout. But the thing is, Tony, you can win a challenge and still lose possession. It's very weird. The whole replay challenge situation.
I will just say challenge. That I admired so much Steve Kerr for saying it's all my fault. I didn't say in the timeout. I didn't say we're out of timeouts. This is 100% on me. I don't know that other coaches would have done that, and he did. Good for him.
I mean, he's got four rings.
That's right.
And he's got the other thing he's got is the greatest shooter in the history of the game.
That's right. Who then missed a shot that could have won the game. And so, right?
They did. Well, Harrison Barnes missed the former.
Right. Missed the last shot.
Missed the shot that could have won the game.
But Curry missed the shot that puts them up three.
Yeah. Yes. Right. And so, what a series. What a series that is. So that series is just. You know, game five is in. Now the pressure for the first time. Well, there was pressure to win game one because they knew nobody believed in them. And I thought there was a lot of pressure on Sacramento to win game one, and they won it. And so now game five, Wednesday night, is, that's a big deal game.
In this sport, if you look at all the sports other than big-time quarterbacks in the NFL, other than that, injuries play a greater factor in basketball than any other sport.
Yep.
Antetokounmpo, Kawhi Leonard, Ja Morant. What do we do with this? You know, what do we do with these injuries that happen, it seems to me, with increasing frequency? I don't remember Magic and Bird and Jordan being hurt like this.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, Magic once limped off with a bad hamstring. When Magic could have another championship, he could have six. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about like game one. And James Worthy was hurt when the Lakers played the Bulls in 91 when the Bulls won their first championship. It happens. It does seem to happen with increasing frequency.
It does.
Tony, why are there more Tommy John surgeries than ever?
I mean, yes, that's right.
A lot of reasons. Including, and I think one of the ones when just talking to trainers and doctors all the time, casually, some for professional reasons when you ask questions like the one you just asked, and then some for personal reasons because I've had contact with enough doctors lately who treat athletes, and one of the things that everybody says, and there's no way to prove it, but I believe it, is that everybody plays one sport all the time from 4 years old until 40. And their bodies are not, and musculature are not evolved in the same way they used to be 100 years ago when the best athletes played everything. And I do believe that. I believe it because I also have a kid who plays one sport. He plays one sport. That's it. And that's all there's time for now if you are pretty good player at one thing. You got to do that thing. You don't get to say, yeah, I'm going to play football now. I'm going to play basketball because it's the season for that. No. And when you talk to pro athletes, you realize they've spent, it's like studying the violin. They have time to do one thing. The culture allows them to do one thing. And so I think that's the primary reason for these.
Okay.
For so many of the same kinds of injuries and these wild increases.
It really is. And let me get to one other thing. Maybe this probably does reflect a personal prejudice that I have. How can Dylan Brooks not get suspended exactly?
These are hard calls. I don't know that. I certainly didn't look at it and think it was intentional. I didn't. I mean, he was going for a swipe of the ball. This happened. That could happen every game, and probably does. So unless you're assigning Dylan Brooks some intent, I didn't think he'd be.
Well, okay. Dylan Brooks has gone out of his way to make this personal between himself and LeBron James. Out of his way to do that. And so that's why I would say, from a preventative measure, and because I don't like this if I'm the commissioner, I'm going to sit him down for one game.
No. He's doing it in a WWE way.
Okay.
I don't believe that Dylan Brooks even believes what he's saying. He's doing this in a, and it's not... Ron Artest has been in this role. Rodman has been in this role. Were those guys ever suspended? Yeah. But I don't believe that Dylan Brooks even believes what he's saying. He's going to theater to try and get LeBron James off his game so they think that's one of the best ways they have to win this series. Do I think it's stupid? Probably. Do I think it's going to work? No.
No.
Do I think there was intent involved in that? No, I just...
Okay, well, let me get...
I wouldn't even consider that.
I will get to the key word. I know you think Minnesota is stupid.
Really stupid.
I think Memphis is stupid, too.
Well, Memphis is really immature. You can say the same thing about Minnesota. But Minnesota has stuff like a guy hitting a wall with his fist on the eve of the playoffs. I mean, Memphis does stupid stuff. I've accused them of that. They're really immature, and that's what they're not ready to win. As good as they can be in the regular season, they're not ready to win. They have another huge step on the growth chain to get to be in position to win. And I don't believe they're gonna. I think the Lakers will win this series.
Me too.
I mean, I think I'm not gonna say I'm sure. I think Memphis is gonna even the series at two. And then we'll see. But Minnesota last night, unbelievable game. Minnesota gave up the final 13 points of regulation to Denver to get tied and take it into overtime. And they are just the dumbest team out there. I say this all the time during PTI. And I have had Hall of Fame players I'm friends with text me or call me during Timberwolves playoffs in this series, they've gone four now, to say to me, yeah, you're right. They're the dumbest thing out there. They're just unbelievably dumb, the stuff that they do. Like last night, Tony, and I know, we have some personal ties, we both do, to that franchise, people in that franchise. I don't mean the franchise is dumb. I don't mean that.
Nathan Bubas. Yeah, on the bench.
Tony, last night they have Karl Anthony Towns guarding with five fouls on the final possession. I don't know whether it was in regulation or early overtime like that. They have him guarding the two-time defending MVP, who's only the craftiest guy out there at the position, maybe ever. They have a guy, their best player, or second best player, Anthony Edwards, is quickly becoming their best player. They got Karl Anthony Towns. How can you have Karl Anthony Towns with five fouls on Joker when you also have Rudy Gobert, who you gave up 50 draft picks to get on the floor? How do you have him? You got five fouls, Karl Anthony. Go guard him. It's just... It's just game after game after game where you're sitting there watching him and you go, what? What is this? And so I'm sorry. I know that teams have things that happen and everything is not under your control, and there are snap decisions that are made that are not effective, and you don't want to call somebody stupid. But they do this so many times now over multiple years, you just sit there and wait for it.
Okay.
So last night that was the bonehead move of the night. But it's
they won.
They also won. They beat Denver. They beat the one seed. And got, they'll likely go on the road now and lose by 30. But
they will. But at least they won one game.
Yes, they won one game, and they were tough and resilient.
Yeah.
And they were a lot of good things. Let me say that for that coaching staff and those players, they were tough, and they stayed it, and they went and they beat them in overtime. So good for them.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, Tom.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we'll take a break. Jason LaConfora will join us. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Well, hold on. Let me see. Just one second.
This is Jacob who writes. I'm Jacob, long time little. This is me trying to help out my little brother and his Brooklyn-based band, Every Flavor Weather Machine. This is their new single. It came out a few weeks ago titled Depression Disco. My brother is on drums and got 100% of the musical talent in our family. Here's the bio for the band. It's a 9-piece disco funk powerhouse hailing from Brooklyn, where they bring their carnival of keyboard-driven grooves to dance floors across the city. This is called Depression Disco. I really like that title. It's because disco makes everyone depressed. That's like really good. Again, the band is called Every Flavor Weather Machine. Michael, if people from Every Flavor Weather Machine want to send in their music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
It plays in Jason LaConfora. And I'll tell you this true story. I was out walking my dog this morning, and close to me is someone who works for the government and gets some protection in front of the house. Okay? And I know the people who sit in the cars because I walk my dog every day, and they know who I am and chat. One of the Secret Service guys gets out of the car and he looks at me and he goes, "So do you hear this stuff about Aaron Rodgers?" And I go, "What? What stuff? Is he what?" And go, "Well, it seems a little shady now about him going to the Jets. He may not go to the Jets." And this leads us into my Aaron Rodgers conversation that agrees 100% down the line with Jason that we have somebody who's just become a whack job in the last couple of years. But anyway, is there? It does occur to me this is draft week, and we have heard nothing about Aaron Rodgers. What's up with him?
Well, I'm just glad. I thought that was going to a something about my legal standing when you mentioned, government officials,
no.
People sitting in cars.
Yeah.
And I thought someone was going to be like, "Hey, yeah. LaConfora, don't put him on your show again."
Yeah,
we got 5 warrants for his arrest.
Yeah,
look, these guys, this is a match made in football follies heaven. I mean, Woody Johnson, Aaron Rodgers, it's going to be awesome, man. It's going to be absolute chaos. It's got to happen. Like this arranged marriage at some point, we'll go off and whatever, the village idiot or the town crier or the mayor or whatever will pronounce them quarterback and franchise, and they will go off into, a season that will net them between 7 and 9 wins and exponentially more ridiculous press conferences. Aaron Rodgers ripping people on his Buddy McAfee show, calling out receivers. Like, it's going to be epic. He's got nowhere else to go and make that kind of money, though. And the Packers have nobody else sitting at the table dumb enough to take on that salary. So at some point, they'll figure it out. Given who's in charge of those two franchises, it's not shocking. It's taken months to solve this riddle. But the Jets got to be smart enough not to fully capitulate and, you know, not give up a one or anything close to it for what's left of this guy, who's more into patting the back of his football card and, you know, creating buzz about himself than he truly is about lifting a franchise or being the best football player he can be. I mean, it's just, you know, it's pretty obvious what he's become and what he's about. And somebody will give him $60 million to continue this Kabuki theater. And that one person is Woody Johnson.
Okay. I'll go to one other quarterback out there story before we turn to the draft, and that's Lamar Jackson. What's going on now with Lamar Jackson?
Nothing. You know, at this point, I think Lamar Jackson's got no real reason to do much with the Ravens. I think if you're Lamar Jackson, you're thinking, all right, well, there's going to be this draft. Is somebody going to be left without the quarterback they thought they were going to get? Is somebody going to reassess their roster in a week or 2 weeks, or, you know, have organizational meetings before they kick off their spring practices and say, wait a minute, you know, that former MVP is just sitting down there at his soul food restaurant in South Florida waiting for somebody to give him a phone call, you know, and it only takes one. So I think there's some teams that might like this proposition more on the other side of the draft for the reasons I just stipulated, as well as the fact that you're now trading future draft picks that you weren't going to use for another year anyway,
right,
you know,
right,
and you've
right.
gone through this process of making your team, you hope, significantly better through the weekend by drafting players, and now you may be sitting there saying, all right, let's take a run at him now. You know, let's see if Baltimore is more vulnerable now that they've given this money to Beckham. You know, or let's just, for pure optics alone, let's not let it look like we thought we were okay with this middling pedestrian or worse quarterback room that
right.
we have. Let's try to sell some, you know, let's get a late run on season tickets. Let's take a run at this guy. And, you know, I think it's most likely that you'll hear a lot of that about the Commanders and maybe the Patriots and I guess the Colts if they don't draft a quarterback, but I really, really think the Colts are drafting a quarterback. You know, maybe the Texans if they don't take a quarterback at 2, which I don't think they're going to do, or they don't take one at 12, which I also don't think they're going to do. You know, there may be some potential suitors sitting there, and if you're Lamar Jackson, at this point, you've got no reason to flinch. You're not playing football for another half year. And you still have until July 17th to get something done long-term with the Ravens, if that is to happen. And I don't think anything long-term would happen, but perhaps there's a 2 or 3 year deal out there for these sides to do.
I will go to quarterbacks in the draft after this, because I'm curious about it. The Georgia kid, the lineman,
yeah.
who was involved in that thing that worked
Jalen
out
Carter,
so yeah, worked out so terribly that 2 people died.
Yeah,
he was supposedly a top 10, maybe even a top
yeah.
5 pick. Has his draft status been affected in any way by this?
At the end, I don't think it will be, Tone. If I had to do a mock right now, and I will have one in the Washington Post on, I believe, Wednesday, I would slot him to Seattle at 5. I don't think he goes much later than that, if at all. This is a draft that is bereft of what you would call blue chip talent, the kind of potentially generational players at key positions that personnel guys would be banging, you know, the table for, like, we got to find a way to get to that pick for that
yeah.
player. You know, if we don't get up into the top 8, the draft falls off a cliff, or we don't get into the top 12. Like, this year, they're, you know, depending on these quarterbacks fare and what you think of them, there might be 6 to 8 of those players. You know, but in some years, there's double digits. And It's also, you know, a weird draft overall because people still can't figure out exactly where the quarterbacks go, which, you know, if you're trying to do your homework and figure out where your sweet spots are and you're not in the quarterback market, then you're hoping as many of them go high as possible. But, you know, as much as we talked all winter about them possibly going 1, 2, 3, 4, that very well may not be the case now. So because Jalen Carter is one of those blue-chip guys in terms of his production, and you can dream on him being a game-wrecking D-tackle, and there's not a lot of edge players who people absolutely love, and there's no wide receivers, you know, and the corners, there is a good corner market, but I do think two of them will still go in the top 10. So, you know, you just start looking at defensive players who could go in the top five. He's in that group, and I think he looks to me like a Seattle Seahawk.
Okay, let me go to what you just said, that it doesn't look to you at this point that quarterbacks will go 1, 2, 3, 4. Go team by team and tell me who's not going to take a quarterback.
Well, you know, Bryce Young is going first overall. That's
right.
Pretty much an accepted fact. Certainly in the betting markets it is. And we've been telling you at the Washington Post for the better part of 2 months that since Carolina made that trade, that that's where that was headed.
Right.
Two, a lot of us assumed, okay, the Texans will just take C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud is the same agent as Deshaun Watson. There is a lot of bad blood there. I think if you stripped out that factor, who represents him, I think the Texans would quietly tell you he is QB2 for them. But they're not taking him there, and they're not in love with the other quarterbacks. I know the betting markets are now showing Will Levis there at 2. I don't fully embrace that. I think the Texans will take the best defensive player on their board, and then I think that would be the pass rusher out of Texas Tech, Tyree Wilson, who some people think has a higher upside if everything maxes out than Will Anderson, the kid from Georgia. Three stuck with Kyler Murray. They've made their bed there, and they can't find a trade partner. Now, ultimately, I think they may, and I can see Tennessee moving up and taking Stroud there, because you want to get ahead of Indianapolis just in case they aren't Team Levis, although a lot of us have thought that they're all over Will Levis. I do think Levis would be the pick for the Colts at 4. You know, and then, like, okay, well, where does Richardson fit in? And I don't think he gets past the Raiders and the Falcons. The GMs and evaluators I talk to in the league, they kind of think those teams doth protest too much about they don't need a quarterback. What are you guys talking about? We've got Ritter and Jimmy G. What more could we ever ask for?
Yeah.
So I'm not buying what they're selling, and maybe one of those teams moves up. Maybe one of those teams moves up to 2, and, you know, that's how the Texans get out of that pick, but we're getting pretty close now, and 2 and 3 have had a really difficult time getting what they think is close to value for their pick. So if they're trades, then those trades are most likely for quarterbacks. If they're not, then I think, you know, the fourth quarterback might end up going in that 7-8 range, more so than 4.
And Led, just to clarify for people listening, the top 4 are, in your mind?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think there's a consensus. I mean, maybe not about the order, but certainly right. about the individuals. Yeah, it's Bryce Young, it's Anthony Richardson, it's C. Will
Stroud.
Levis,
and,
and it's C.J. Stroud. And I do think Hendon Hooker, the fifth quarterback, goes in the first round as well.
Okay.
And I know last week there were some pretty interesting prop bets about, you know, 4.5 quarterbacks in the first round, and you could get pretty good value for the over. I think someone will get him in the first round, because if he is a redshirt next year, if he's a medical sort of project, you want to have the fifth year on him. You want to have the fifth year option on him, which you can only get if you take him in the first round. And I think Minnesota would be a real natural fit for him at 23.
Fascinating to me that the influence of betting on our lives, that, you know, that you're now betting how many quarterbacks go in X amount of picks. I mean, I'll just ask one other question. It's
over
another
1.5 running backs, 2-tone. Wow. I would get on that one.
It's another quarterback
question. Might pay for a round of golf.
Yeah. Brock Purdy had a sensational 6 or 8 games, whatever he had, for San Francisco. He was the last kid picked.
Yeah.
What does that tell you about draft experts, if anything?
Well, I think we also need to, like, make sure, like, Brock Purdy is this thing that we kind of think he is. You know, like, he's played in a conference that was down.
Yes.
He had the best defense in that conference with him. He's got Kyle Shanahan, you know, devising things up and putting him in positions to succeed. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Kyle Shanahan's the best coach in the league. I think he's far from it. But just in terms of someone who can incubate a quarterback – and from week to week and play to play, put him in positions to succeed, I think he's way up there. So, and even with all that, I still believe if Tom Brady, you know, wakes up the day after Thanksgiving and says, I'm ready to go see my man Tom House for 6 weeks and be ready for January, you know, and start the workout, start the kinesiology, start the throwing program, I think Kyle Shanahan's at the head of the list of trying to bring him in. So But it's an inexact science, you know. It's difficult. I think teams go about it different ways. Some are maybe a little more old school. Some feel like with quarterbacks you really have to rely on the eye test. Some feel like we got to keep finding new models and new algorithms and new ways to you know, crunch all this emerging data so that we're seeing something nobody else is seeing from a numerical standpoint. I think some of it is luck. I think a lot of it is, though, who is he, where is he? It's not just, like, where he's going. It's who's the, who else is there. Like, who has a pedigree and who has proven that they understand how quarterbacks think and what quarterbacks need? What kind of team do you build around him? I mean, just go back. Just look at down the road in Baltimore. In 2019, there is no more joyful, ebullient, floating on air quarterback on the planet than Lamar Jackson. Right? Like, that thing, that moment, that synergy of scheme and talent and, like, and 2 years later, you know what I mean? It's like,
that's right.
They're hedging their bets, and they finally got rid of the coordinator, and, well, do we think he'll be better with the new – did we get enough for him? You know what I mean? Should we have changed the scheme sooner? Like, did we run him too much? Did we not run him enough? Like, it can be incredibly fleeting, which, again, I go back to Purdy and say, I'd slow our roll there.
Okay.
But, yeah, evaluating quarterbacks is something this league has always struggled with, and I suspect will continue to struggle with for years to come.
Plug your radio show for us, Jason.
Hopefully I do not sound quite as allergic as I am right now. two Zyrtex, not enough these days. But you can listen to me opine from 2 to 6 daily on 105.7 The Fan, or listen on the Odyssey app, or stream us at www.1057thefan.com. And you can listen to me all of Thursday night with my boy Brian Baldinger on Twitch or YouTube on the Odyssey channels. We will be doing our draft broadcast from 7 until whenever this thing ends, which I'm guessing is probably around midnight.
Wow. Good for you. Thanks, Jason.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me as always, guys. Thank you.
Jason LaCanfora, who's actually the best. He's the best. We'll take a break. We will have email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
That's Phil Coleman on an instrument called the euphonium.
Yes.
It's just wonderful. It makes you want to dance.
It does.
Want to do the penguin dance.
Makes you want to do the penguin dance. Unbelievable. You want to do the
back
Bethesda,
to the front.
Bethesda bagel ad side to side.
Bethesda bagels, we love them. We got the bagel sandwiches today. Always happy about that. All you need to do is go to BethesdaBagels.com, find a location in the DC area nearest you, then pop on in and you will be thrilled.
That'll keep Dad fed all week.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yes.
So before we get to the mailbag, let me just say this. That Nigel said to me, I'll just give you the first line. I then did the entire song.
Yes, you did.
All he said was John and Mitchie. And John and Mitchie were getting kind of itchy just to leave the folk music behind. Zal and Denny working for a penny trying to get a fish on the line. In a coffee house, Sebastian sat, and after every number, they'd pass the hat. McGuinn and McGuire just to getting higher. In L.A., you know where that's at. And no one's getting fat except Mama Cass. The end of the song is everybody's getting fat but Mama Cass. It's called Creek Alley. It's the autobiography of the Mamas and the Papas, and, you know, and the Love and Spoonful, and, you know, the Birds, and Barry McGuire, and all of that stuff. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon, Jason LaCanfora. Thanks to our sponsors, Priceline, ZipRecruiter. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple, please.
Are these songs in and out, or are they going to just stay with you all day?
Creek like Alley will be with me for at least 3 hours. Yes, it'll be in my head for at least 3 hours. Sure.
But again, when I asked you, You just railed for the entire whole song.
This is the only thing. I remember some sporting events and all rock and roll songs and nothing else.
1960s high school
This is
sports.
From January 31st. I never got to it. I was listening to Monday's podcast, and some of you, I don't know what that means, were wondering if teeth are bones. They're not. The teeth has no bone marrow, and they cannot regenerate. Teeth has pulp, dentin, enamel, and cementum. I'm taking an anatomy and physiology course this semester to prepare for nursing school, so I'm glad I found this factoid out before you mentioned about your tooth issue. So, isn't that right? From Eileen Robinson in Rochester, Minnesota. Hmm. And from Joe Pearson in Indianapolis, who has emailed us a bunch of times.
Yes.
I'm not a doctor, although my dad was, but I've had the condition you describe. Mine, however, was in the right leg. The pain sounds exactly the same. I'm sure you get email from lots of orthopedists who will suggest similarly, but it sounds like an L1, L2 compression. It's exactly what it is. That is, your nerve roots are being compressed between the lumbar 1 and lumbar 2 vertebrae. Technically, if you want to go there, the pain is not actually in your leg. Your brain just thinks it is because it is getting signals from the nerve root that serves your legs. Yeah, it's. I thought it was the S1, not the L1. But yeah, that's what I've got. I need to decompress my nerves. Anyway, there is physical therapy to relieve the pressure, unless that is counterindicated. See, I can use doctor words. Like you, I never want to mention the S word because that just seems like the start of a slippery slope. That S word is obviously surgery, and my balance isn't that good to begin with. Good luck. Joe Pearson, son of a doctor and nurse, brother to a nurse, Indianapolis. From Andrew Frank, from Bentonville, Arkansas. This is only relevant to the opening of the show the other day, referencing the cinematic masterpiece that is That Thing You Do. Those who enjoy Captain Geach and his compadres of shooting shrimp might enjoy this. While watching the extended cut of the film last week with my masculine child, I noticed something. The scene after the jazz bar with Rita Wilson's character and Guy in the extended version is followed by Guy drunkenly arriving at the hotel. This would be the evening before the Hollywood television showcase. To open the scene, we see a well-dressed man by a small red sports car. Who should be waiting for someone outside by a sporty car at the hotel? Howie Long.
Yes.
Yes, that Howie Long. Is there another? After coaxing Guy to go inside and sleep off his drunken stupor, Howie and Tom take off into the night. The longer cut of the movie is filled with all sorts of fun Easter eggs, such as a bar fight at that place out by the airport. I led you here, sir, for I Am Spartacus. Elliot Olshansky, Comac, and he's yelling at me, and he's correct. Elliot's correct.
Okay.
Did I really hear you complaining last week about never getting an invite to the White House Easter egg roll when your golf buddy was president? As you have pointed out on many occasions, you're from the other side of the street. Need I remind you that you did indeed go to the Hanukkah party where you were entertained by an a cappella group, 613, with deep roots at your own alma mater, performing a medley with lyrics by one of your own loyal littles? Besides, you were not yet a grandfather when 44 was president. What would you do? Have Michael get down on his hands and knees with a wooden spoon and grin as if he was riding a Shetland pony at Woodward's house? Best regards from Suffolk County, where I did not get to write for 613 this Passover, as they covered a medley of songs from The Prince of Egypt to celebrate the film's 25th anniversary. But I did write a parody medley for Binghamton's Jewish a cappella group, Keskeset, which should be released sometime soon. From Kenny Ray in Fort Walton Beach in Florida. The other day, Nigel used the phrase, the pros from Dover. Does anyone under the age of 60 remember where that phrase originated? I do. 19, but I'm not under 60. 1968, the book MASH by Richard Hooker. It's how Hawkeye would con his way onto fancy golf courses by claiming he was the pro from Dover. One of the reasons the movie MASH was so good is because the book was so good, so well written. Way to go, Nigel. There is there are a couple of scenes in which Donald Sutherland and Elliot Gould just say the pros from Dover.
Pros from Dover.
We're here.
It's a great phrase.
From Nicholas Vamvas in Albany, New York. I have a bagel story. A lovely shop opened down the street from us within the past year. My guess would be late summer. Their opening had been greatly anticipated in our neighborhood, and they were absolutely slammed for the first couple of months. I would drive by on my way to work in the morning, hoping to see little to no line so I could get in and out quickly. To my constant dismay, dozens of people would be standing outside the small bakery waiting to place their orders. But I'm a savvy millennial, I think to myself. I'll see if they take online orders so I can skip the line. I go to my Google machine. I search for the name of the bakery, Pearl's Bagels and Bakery. They appear to have a website, so I click the link. Lo and behold, they do, in fact, take online orders. I'm overjoyed that I can finally grab breakfast on my way to the office. I place my order, pop on in, and expect to be thrilled. Confidently, I saunter up to the counter to ask my order. I don't think we're taking online orders, says the clueless cashier. I smugly remove my phone from my pocket to show her the order confirmation. That's not us. That's Pearl's Bagels in D.C. Yeah. I ordered a bagel sandwich and large coffee from a bagel shop roughly 360 miles from my house. I eventually did get to try the bagels at Pearl's and all, but then I highly recommend them to all littles. Okay. And on that same area, Dave in Cleveland Park in Washington. During the show, you correctly pointed out to the recent bagel renaissance ongoing in the D.C. area. Recently, my partner and I took on the challenge of trying bagels from about 15 different local bagel shops in the DMV. Over the course of a year, our study included comparing everything bagels and assigning points to the different qualities of what we considered important to a good bagel: seasoning taste, seasoning coverage, texture, consistency, and overall flavor. In the end, we concluded that some of the ones you mentioned finished in the top four of our competition, but ultimately the winner was one you did not mention. I encourage you and your team to try out Pearl's Bagels near the D.C. Convention Center. Their Everything Bagel has a variety of seasonings, excellent seasoning coverage, outstanding overall flavor, and all the necessary chew characteristics of a properly boiled
bagel.
All
about the chew.
After you try them, it should put the question of the best D.C. bagel to rest. So there's Pearl's in Albany, and there's Pearl's in D.C.
I got a breakfast sandwich and a large coffee waiting for me.
Yeah.
Ordered online.
From Stephen Parker in Laurel, Maryland. After listening to your readings of One in a Million Coincidences for years, well, we've only been doing it for like weeks, I have finally decided that my one in a million is worthy of sharing. Decades ago, I was visiting University of Maryland, former college floor mate. We'd become close friends after Maryland had recently decided to allow co-ed dormitories. This should date me. We had both graduated from Maryland the previous year. I was visiting her in her apartment in D.C., and she had an out-of-state visitor that I was taken with. Small chit-chat ensued. The usual. Where are you from? Massachusetts? Me too. What part? Worcester? Me too. Really? You know Chandler Street? You have a relative who lives on Geneva Street, she says. My jaw dropped. So do I said. We looked at each other. Then at the same time, we both said, Shaw. Turns out she was a second or third cousin. Needless to say, I dropped my pursuit of this young lady. I forgot to shut off lights in the house and can't find the milk in the fridge, but I still remember this story from Stephen Parker in Laurel, Maryland. And one more. From Bill Miklas in Kingston in Ontario. So April 3rd, the night of the NCAA Men's Championship game, myself and my good friend Derek Taylor were at City Oyster in Delray Beach in South Florida before going to a sports bar for a tip-off. Derek is wearing the Drink, Eat, Chatter t-shirt. We were enjoying a beverage while at the bar. Then a gentleman approaches Derek, who is a large, bald-headed fellow, taps him on the arm and says, I apologize for this, but La Cheeserie. He told us he was from Kentucky, and we told him we were both from Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Had a quick chat about how it was all of our inaugural random La Cheeserie. I told Derek that I needed to email the story in. Derek wanted me to also tell you that between 1996 and 2000, when you announced you got your first Cadillac, he sent you a Cadillac CTS keychain in the shape of a steering wheel. Anyway, thanks for the awesome show that brings unlikely strangers together. Isn't that amazing?
That is great.
These things are amazing. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
But we don't have the chutzpah to do it.
Went to Symphony Hall, got tickets and I caught a Yasha Heifetz concert, a Beethoven sonata. The music was sublime, those composers, those Germans. Then suddenly from the box seats, I noticed a disturbance. Some guy leaped on the stage from the second row, said, Mr. Heifetz, you've got too much rosin on your bow. Phil Cousy is my name, I'm gonna stop the show. Your bow has too much rosin on your bow. Too much rosin on your bow. Your bow has too much rosin on your bow. Yasha Heifetz said, I'm shattered. You really hurt my feelings. And oh, by the way, I'll be definitely appealing. Phil Cousy shrugged and said, Yasha, please now leave the rostrum. He jerked his thumb at Heifetz. Phil Cousy, yeah, he tossed him. Too much rosin on your bow. Your bow has too much rosin on your bow.
Well, hold on. Let me see. Just 1 second. I should make a call.
So I'll just while away the hours, picking petals off the flowers, hang around. Wonder why you never came around. I thought I got it all right, I swiped right and kept you up all night. Digital repartee, like age, sex, location. Yo, what's your vocation? Trying to get to know ya. I really, really, really just wanna know. Never enough, never enough, never enough. People now hit me up.